Hello and welcome to Mental Notes from my minivan. This is Kirsty Sayer and this is the final episode of the year. It would be since it is almost 5:30 on New Year's Eve. And I just really couldn't see the year end without one last episode because this is the year that the podcast began. And so it's something that I've been very proud of and really grateful for this year. And so I'm kind of a ritualistic person. I like to end things, wrap things up on the last day of the year as much as I can. And so this feels fitting. The first episode that I did was entitled Get the Bloody Thing Done. And it was a pep talk to myself, as most of these podcasts are, to be honest. To just dive in and get the bloody thing done. It was something I'd been wanting to do for a long time, and so I decided that I was going to just do it in all of its imperfections, in all of its, lack of professionalism, the whole thing. I made a decision not to do edits, not to obsess about production, not to obsess about quality or having the right microphone or anything and just go for it. And I'm really glad I did because I think this is episode 20 or 21. And I'm not entirely sure when I started. I should check on that, but that's not bad for a few months or even for a whole year, I think. When you look at it in terms of it could have been zero episodes if I'd kept second guessing myself and waiting for the perfect moment and waiting for everything to be aligned and to have all the exact right equipment and to feel prepared, because let's face it, we just won't ever feel prepared for things if we obsess enough about them or we're perfectionistic enough about things. We will always find reasons to be insecure and always find reasons to be or just excuses not to dive in and take a couple of risks. And so that's really what this episode today is going to be more about. Coming full circle on Get the Bloody Thing Done. Here's episode 21 or 20. I wish I'd really locked that down before I started talking, but let's say 21. So the podcast is now a fully fledged adult. And this is Get the Bloody Thing Done, Part 2. So what I noted, and I've been reflecting over Christmas, is that, as I mentioned in the last episode, that episode was called 'Tis the Season to be Triggered, which was particularly relevant to me and I think to so many people. The holidays are a triggering time for a variety of reasons, but for me, the holidays were tied up with actual, trauma that happened, events happened in the chronological time frame of the holidays. So for, a lot, it's sort of layers of triggers for me. And I spoke about a couple of times when I didn't understand the triggers and they blindsided me and everything. But upon reflection, I've dealt with triggers since, I was, a very, very, very young child around the holidays, and I've managed to, I was noticing that what I've consistently managed to achieve is that I have managed to show up for my family, and get the bloody thing done every holiday regardless. And that's not true of all times. There's lots of times that I wasn't able to show up for my family and I just felt like I couldn't get anything done. I couldn't exist. And that is, there's so much to unpack with that and talk about. But what I wanted to talk about today is looking at when we have accomplished something, when we have, against various odds and with challenges and with triggers and with difficulties, still managed to get the bloody thing done, and why and how. And I think I'm confident in saying that every single person that's listening has had some type of success in their life. And I'm sure many, but something that you can look back on where you, you know, really achieved a goal that you had and things did fall into place for you and you felt good about yourself. And if you're struggling to just get the bloody thing done, a good exercise I find is to look back to a time that you did get something done. And to sort of dismantle the parts of that and what came together in order to help you to get that done. And, you know, what were the things, what were the elements? And then apply them to your life over and over again and tweak them to make it possible for you to keep getting things done and to make that a consistent pattern in your life so that more often than not, you're having days where you do feel fulfilled, that you have done something meaningful and useful with your life, that you do feel satisfied with the day's work. Because I think that's very healing, you know, regardless of where we are at any moment in time, if we're struggling desperately with depression, PTSD, or just normal grief or difficulties that arise in everybody's life over and over again, because that's life, you know, it's one set of challenges after another with maybe some brief reprieves here and there, but we tend to think, you know, it's supposed to be perfect, and when bad things happen, then that's an anomaly, and which is completely the opposite. When you come to recognize that life is a series of challenges with maybe a few moments of, you know, smooth sailing between where you can catch your breath and refortify for the next set of challenges, then, you know, it becomes, you feel less put upon, I think. So when we're recognizing that, you know, it's good to get bloody things done, to get the bloody thing done more often than not, for yourself, for your sense of self, for your, you know, sense of self-actualization, as well as for the good of your family and your community and, you know, your friends and loved ones. And it's just good to get things done. And, you know, if we're always waiting to be completely in a good psychological place to kind of fulfill goals or to show up for people, we're going to find ourselves not, you know, more often than not, not only letting ourselves and other people down, but also not progressing out of our difficult psychological places. So all this to say is that I looked at Christmas, I sort of struck me, you know, like over the years I've had many, many, many difficult Christmases, either because I was triggered since the time I was 4 years old, basically around this time of year, with trauma, and also because circumstances were often very difficult, sad, challenging in different ways for me, and I'm sure as they are for just most people, you know, I was going to say great swaths of people, but most people, like I said, holidays kind of magnify things. And so, you know, it's hard. And so how have I managed to be consistent in giving my family a nice, good Christmas every year, regardless of triggers, emotional setbacks, and challenges in terms of just, you know, all sorts of things, finances and feeling very sad because I didn't have family or having family and around and having great conflicts with family and stuff. How have I managed to pull it together? And so I decided to dissect that so that I could apply it to other facets of my life. You know, how is it that as long as I've had a family, which is, you know, my oldest son is 20 now, and so, and I've been married for 23 years. How is it that in 23 years I've managed to kind of like keep it together every year consistently? That's a good track record. What is it that makes it that way? And I'm not saying that I'm remarkable in any way. I think most mothers and most parents and most people manage to get things consistently together. But this is for the purpose of illustration. So I decided to kind of like take it apart and see, you know, how have I managed to function at a high level, during these times, despite the fact that things haven't been perfect for me, despite the fact that I was triggered, and you know, sort of give of myself and be pleased with the outcome and be useful to my family. And so I sort of broke it down into 10 things that I think we can apply. And I like it that it's on New Year's Eve that I'm doing this, because I think a lot of people's minds have turned to achieving goals, you know, maybe leveling up in their life somewhat or buckling down and getting some things done. And I think these 10 things, when they're applied to trying to get things done, are pretty foolproof, you know. And, you know, feel free to make 10, you know, look at your own past successes and make your own 10 things or 5 things or 3 things that really kind of make things work for you. So my 10 things regarding how I've managed to put together some pretty elaborate, warm, cozy, happy memory Christmases for my family for the last 23 years. These are the 10 things that maybe weren't there for every single Christmas, but I've kind of honed over time, and here they are. Number one, accepting and knowing your limitations. First of all, you've got to be aware, and I think, you know, this is why Christmas is a good, or, you know, the holidays are a good illustration for us all. Because if, unless we're completely, you know, irresponsible and, or exceedingly just have all kinds of wealth that we don't have to think about anything, we all have limitations, you know. We all have to recognize that we have so much time and energy, space, money, and will, you know, desire to put into any particular project. And so for me, you know, it's very neat, because I recognize, as in neat, not in nice, but as in orderly, because I know that I have a budget. And there's only so much money. And so I can't, you know, I need to recognize that I have this much money to spend on each person, this much money to spend on food, this much money to spend on decorations and gifts for friends. And I have this much space, you know, to entertain in and to, you know, open my home to so many people. And so I have to make choices and accept that there are limitations and know them and be very real about them. So, you know, deciding how much am I going to spend on each individual and then making the most of that. How much, how many times will I entertain this season, and then making the most of that. You know, how much, how many times do I want to clean up after entertaining, after, you know, that sort of like planning and looking, look, what have I got? What have I got, and how am I going to make the most of these things? And I think, you know, sometimes we go, I want to lose weight. Okay, well, what are your limitations with that? You know, do you have the money to pay for a nutritionist and a personal trainer? And if you don't, then what do you have? And how much energy and how much time, and what are you willing, you know, what are you able to put in terms of researching, and how much will do you have to do this? So whatever it is that you're applying to, recognize what the limitations are and be strategic, lay it out, write it down, be like, you know, intentional about things. The next thing that I've really kind of managed over the years and become much, much better at, and our Christmases and our holidays have become exponentially more enjoyable and less stressful for everybody, is accepting what is not in your control. So I talked about this last time, that you can't manage everybody's mood. You know, you have no control over everybody's happiness. You can set the stage for happy experience, but people are going to bring their own baggage, their own moods, their own chemical imbalances, their own triggers, their own drama that you are not even aware of. So you can set things up for, you know, a good experience as much as you can, but you also need to recognize what's not in your control. And, you know, everybody waking up sick on Christmas is a reality, and that is not something you can obsess about. So, you know, accept what's not in your control and just accept it. Put it aside, you know. Don't try to plan and obsess over every eventuality. And that's kind of brings us into the next thing, is that, you know, you need to take the horror out of the idea of failure. If you want to get the bloody thing done, you cannot get preoccupied with failure and how terrible it is, because failure is not the end of the world, unless your goal is to escape a, you know, do some kind of Houdini type of exercise where you are in a tank full of water chained up, and if you can't get out of that, then, you know, game over, you're dead. Practically nothing you embark upon is the end of the world. It might be truly uncomfortable, and it might create a lot of chaos for a while, but nothing ventured, nothing gained. So if you are, you know, if you've looked at embarking on something and you feel like there is a possibility of failure, but there's a greater possibility of success, and you do, you've weighed up the pros and cons and you decide to go for it, then you cannot think about, you know, what if I fail all the time. You've got to really put that aside and go, well, I might, and accept that you could, but also recognize that failure is almost never the end of the world. And going back to what we were talking, what I was talking about at the beginning, where I said, you know, life is a series of challenges with brief periods of respite in between. Life is more failure than success. And so, you know, accept that. That if we think of how many times a baby falls over when they're learning to walk, if the first time they landed unceremoniously on their bum or their face, they gave up on the thing and went, well, that's a failure, there would be none of us walking. And so, you know, before they actually start taking consistent steps, and even long after they do, they're always falling over. They're falling over way more than they're not. And so, you know, if we accept that, you know, doing things that are worthwhile is going to create, you know, is going to create opportunities for failure, you know, quite a bit more often than success, and accept that and recognize that it's part of life, and it's a good, growing, important, imperative part of life, we're going to be okay. You know, we're going to get more things bloody well done, because we will be, you know, less paralyzed. You know, it's, what's the point of just sitting around and fearing failure, so doing nothing? So, you know, that's the thing. You know, I'll take it back to my silly Christmas analogy. If I'm so afraid that everything won't turn out perfect because somebody might wake up with strep throat, or somebody might be vomiting in the night, or, you know, what if the Christmas tree, you know, lights start a fire and all the presents get singed or burned or whatever. You know, I mean, crazy, you know, thinking through of what's the point of doing any of these things, because it could all end up that we have a terrible day. Well, that would be ridiculous, and we would have never had any kind of Christmases at all. So I know this is a silly kind of very almost a shallow analogy, but it's something that I think we can sort of, it's on my mind, and it's right, you know, accessible for all of us, because we've just finished the holidays. All right, so next up, defining your own success. You know, we need to recognize that your success is your success. You know, you've got to recognize that what looks incredibly impressive to somebody else may not be anywhere close to what you can really do, your potential. And if you're just phoning it in all the time, you're not going to be very satisfied with yourself. You know, if you could do a lot more, you should do a lot more, because you'll feel better, you know. And likewise, if you're best, or even, you know, a good shot, which is, you know, what we should, you know, be doing most days. You don't have to freaking tap out every single day in exhaustion. But a decent shot might be look quite pathetic to somebody else who's in a different place. You know, my idea of a good run is laughable to many other people who are accomplished athletes or even, you know, more avid runners than I. But what's good for me is good for me, you know. So once we've defined our own success, and, you know, my success looks this way, my success looks like me feeling this way at the end of the day, my success looks like I have hit the high notes in terms of serving people and creating family traditions that have brought us together so many times during the season, and my success looks like my home is orderly and cozy, but does not look like something out of Pottery Barn, because that's not within the realms of possibility. And my success is having a casual party for my kids' friends and not a full-fledged gala. I think Americans say gala, you know, with, you know, people wandering around serving champagne to people. It's just, you know, you've got to recognize what your vision of success is and then have a very clear vision of what it is. That's the other thing. Have a very clear picture in your mind of what you're going for. Because if it's kind of very, if it's very, very nebulous, it's really hard to achieve. And that's another thing with Christmas. I know exactly, over time, I know exactly what it looks like. You know, I know what needs to be accomplished by what day for things to run smoothly. And so that helps me to, even when I am in a difficult emotional place, to just kind of go into autopilot. Well, on this day, we start doing the 12 days of Christmas tradition, regardless of how we feel. On the 13th of December, we choose a person who needs a lift in our mind, and we get to work. And every single day of that season, we drop something off anonymously for that person. And we go as a family and we do that, regardless of how everybody's feeling. So I have a clear picture, a clear, you know, guideline in my mind. It's not based on how I feel. I know what's expected. I know what I need to do. The picture is very clear. You know, there's a map. And I think putting that map out there and then defining your success according to how closely you sort of hit the high points or, you know, the destinations on that map. And don't compare it to somebody else's map. And I think once we define our own success, it's so much more rewarding. You know, if you're motivated by the right things, which brings us to the next step. Check your motivations. What are you motivated by? If you're motivated by looking better than somebody else or impressing people, that's not ever going to work out in your favor. First of all, the people you're trying to impress will no doubt not be impressed. I don't know why it is that it works that way, but if you are laboring all your life and spinning your wheels trying to get people to pay attention, a certain group of people, or a certain person to pay attention, and they're not giving you that validation, that's for a reason, and it's a bad motivation to have. And usually those are not people that are necessarily good for you. If you're feeling a strain to validate yourself in the eyes of somebody or impress somebody, there's something wrong. And we can talk about that more later, but impressing other people really doesn't need to be a goal. It doesn't turn out well. I find that being motivated by love is the way to go. And sometimes that's love for my children, my husband, my community, my friends, people I feel like need more love in their lives. Often it's motivated by self-love. How do I want to feel at the end of this? Do I want to feel proud of myself? Do I want to feel like I've done my best? How do I want to feel at the end of this day or at the end of this run? You know, even if I run 2 minutes slower than my goal, do I want to feel like I gave it my all? Or do I, you know, whatever the goal is for that run, do I want to feel like I cleared my head? Do I want to feel like I enjoyed nature? Or that I really, you know, put my body through its paces, whatever it is. What are you motivated by? And if it's impressing other people or putting up a good show, it's usually not going to be, well, I can't think of a time for myself that it's, that has worked out well. You will be disappointed with other people's reactions. You will feel a certain type of emptiness and an endless striving that will never be satisfying. But if you're motivated by love and wanting to make other people's lives better, it's almost always works out. And if you're motivated by loving yourself and knowing that you deserve good things and you deserve to have achieved what you set out to do in some form or another, you will find that, you know, whatever you do end up doing is a lot more likely to be successful and satisfying and fulfilling. All right, what else? The next thing is having the right tools. Another thing, you know, that's helped me to sort of go into autopilot and get Christmas bloody well done regardless of how I feel and have good Christmases consistently is knowing what I need to make that happen. I need a certain amount of money. If I don't have that certain amount of money, then I'm going to need extra time and resources. And so I need to adjust accordingly. I need to start earlier so that I can be shopping at thrift stores or making things or figuring things out or, you know, working extra odd jobs or whatever it is. So have the right tools, you know, recognize what tools you need. Honestly, for whatever goal it is, gather your tools before you start and don't get paralyzed with that either, that you, I can't start until I have, figure out the bare minimum you need. You know, like I said with the podcast, I don't have anything except for my phone. I don't have a fancy mic. I don't have a fancy app. I don't have anything except for my phone and my voice and my thoughts. And that's enough at this point. So, you know, I gathered those tools, and so don't overcomplicate the thing. But if you need to wrap a bunch of presents, then you're going to be frustrated if you start out with half a roll of wrapping paper and two pieces of tape and, you know, rusty scissors that were used to cut open a bunch of popsicles this summer. You know, like, so get your act together, get your stuff together, get your tools together, get your people together, get your information together, whatever it is that you're trying to achieve, figure out what tools you need, gather them as quickly as possible, and, you know, don't overcomplicate the thing. Don't use that as an excuse, but, you know, we do need certain tools. We do need certain things. We do need plans, whatever it is. If you're planning to get fit, then do the research. How do I get fit without hurting myself? How do I do this in a sustainable fashion? You know, what is actually going to make me fit rather than just make me think I'm getting fit? So, you know, that brings us to asking for help. For anything that needs to be achieved, anything major, and especially if you're struggling with mental health challenges, if you are finding that, you know, you're digging deep to get the bloody thing done, even though you're feeling very low, be sure to ask for a lot of help and support, and people are willing to give it. We just need to be vulnerable enough to ask for it, and that can often be a gift to other people who might see us struggling but not know or feel weird about offering help. Ask for help, you know, and be specific about the type of help you need. If you're just like waiting and being a martyr and hoping somebody will, you know, offer to help, well, guess what? People have their own lives and people have their own problems and everybody's struggling with something, and often they're just very preoccupied with that. And so it doesn't mean they don't love you and they're not willing to help. Sometimes people just are really focused on what's going on in front of them and they would be delighted to help. And sometimes they're very acutely aware of what kind of help you need, but they're afraid to offend you by offering it. So if you need help, do everybody, including yourself, a favor by asking for it and asking for it in specific ways. Can you please help me in this way? That would be great. And the worst people can say is no, and then you can move on and find somebody else to help. And then, you know, put a deadline on the thing. I think that's what, and make the whole thing sustainable. I think that's what has been helpful to me also around Christmas. It's not nebulous. It's a concrete thing. I know that I have this many days, and on December 25th, it's go time, or December 24th, and I need to get that done. And so if I have to dig deep, and, you know, I know it's going to sacrifice, I know I'm going to sacrifice time and energy and some sleep, and just, you know, I need to buckle that down and do it, but I do know that there's an end in sight. There's a deadline. And like I said before, don't make your deadline being total burnout. Create deadlines for your goals. Create, you know, by this day, I want to have accomplished this much with regards to this goal. And then make, you know, the effort sustainable. If it was Christmas all year round, there's no way that I could do it because it's a very intense effort. And so the reason I can do it is because I know that it's going to end at some point and I can push through it, and it's going to have a big lavish reward with lots of good feelings. And so, you know, the dreary parts I can push through, and the fun parts are fun because I know, you know, the good parts are going to end and that's sad, and the bad parts are going to end and that's good. And I know that either way it's going to end, and so I can push through and accomplish things. And I think that's important for every goal. If you're like, by this day, you know, I want to lose weight, don't put that out there. You know, don't be like, I want to lose weight. Well, how much weight do you want to lose? And then how long do you think you can sustain the effort in losing that weight? You know, if you've got 150 pounds to lose, you need to break that down and then go, you know, I'm going to lose 5 pounds by this date and focus on that. And this is not a big revelation. Making sustainable goals so that your energy level can match, you know, you whatever it is that you need to do, you know that there's some kind of deadline in sight, and you don't have this long, arduous, high intensity output for this sort of with no end in sight. You must have a deadline. You must be able to make things sustainable, achievable. And so breaking goals into short term allows us to give it our all, or at least pace ourselves and not give it our all, but give it enough so that we'll get there if it's a very long term goal. So that's, you know, none of this is really earth shattering, but it is completely valid. This is how we get things done. This is how I've managed to always pull it together regardless of how bad I felt around Christmas time. And I think if we apply these same sort of theories to everything we do, or at least some of them, or, you know, like I said, go back and figure out what it is that you always manage to accomplish. Do you always, you know, whatever it is, I'm having kind of a brain cramp right now. I can't think of anything. Any kind of other illustration right now, but whatever it is that you've accomplished in the past under difficult circumstances, again, take that apart, dissect it, look at what made it successful, and then apply it to more things in your life. And you'll find, I think, that, you know, we can get more done than we think. We can get the bloody thing done even if we aren't feeling up to it. And accepting that a lot of the time we're not going to feel up to it. But if we do get the bloody thing done, we'll feel marginally more up to it every day. And while PTSD is so very complicated and sometimes does require complete rest and will just sideline you, and that's, I've covered that many, many times, there are other times that we can kind of heal ourselves by also continuing to achieve small things every day. And that's sort of my message today as we go into a new year, that you are worthy of doing good things for yourself, and you will feel better the more you believe that and the more you actually achieve that. So I didn't mean to rhyme like that, it sounds so cheesy, but so think about successes and apply those, that same formula, and let me know how it goes. Thank you again for joining me for these many episodes this year. and for coming along on this journey. I'm so appreciative, as I've said 100 times before. I have big plans for 2019. I received an actual microphone for my podcast. I haven't figured out how to use it yet, but I'm going to just so level up next year, and I would love to know what kinds of things you would like to hear about or talk about, or people you'd like me to interview, or if you yourself would like to be interviewed. I'd love more input to make 2019 really excellent and get this whole thing next level, so that I can help as many people as possible. And so I'm really open to suggestions. Let me know. Email me kirsty.sayer@gmail.com, or on Facebook, I'm Kirsty Sayer. On Instagram, Momity Kirsty. You know, call me or leave a comment. You can do that on iTunes. And please share this with friends if you think it's helpful to them. Thank you so much again for being part of this, for being part of 2018. It's been a very full, eventful year, full of really great things, really bad things. But at the end of it all, I'm feeling good, and I'm feeling like I'm a stronger, much, much stronger version of myself and than I was when I began the year. And I'm really, really grateful for that and for all the people who had a part to play in that. So love you so much. Happy New Year. Remember, this is just a day. Do not put too much emphasis into any of it. just chill. Go to bed at 9 o'clock if that's your jam, because it really doesn't matter and it doesn't say anything about your life or you. Remember, a bad day is not a bad life, or a bad month is not a bad life. Peace out 2018, and much, much love to you all. Thanks again. See you next year.